Molas, 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 molas. Molas, 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 molas. Molas, molas, molas.
Come and get less with me. All the pints are bloody free. Have I told you I've got a high basic salary? Making money.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to episode 198 of the Rigbiz Podcast. We've only got three episodes to go, including this one. And of course, at the 198th time, I'm joined by the wonderful Mr. Archie Cousin. Archie, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Commiserations on the run. I'm sorry that didn't go to plan.
That's fine. Yeah. Do not worry. No, it's good to be back, mate. I'm feeling very strong. First pod of the year.
Yes.
Obviously, only three to go. But mate, the chat is on point. The rig is looking phenomenal, and we've got less than 2 weeks until our live show, and over 500 people bought tickets, mate. It's gonna be
up at 600 by the time goosey. We go out there.
Mate, can't wait to play this button live.
Another one. And another one.
We're talking about another one. We've got...
Mate, I've missed that button.
We got another...
I bloody missed that button.
Okay, well, calm down. We've got an England legend on the show today, but we've also got another one for our live show, Mr. Anthony Watson, confirmed. England's fourth all-time try scorer.
Yeah, well, we had to pull out the stops. I'll tell you what it came down to.
Go on.
We had Monty Panesar, Johnny Fisher,
and
then Anthony Watson.
Yeah.
Monty Panesar said he'd do it for free, which was a bonus because we'd have just taken the cash.
Yeah.
Johnny Fisher just said he could say bosh, and I don't know whether that would have been a good interview.
No.
And Anthony Watson, absolute legend.
What about
of the
Andy
game.
Powell? Oh, he's been banned.
Andy Powell's been banned from Clapham.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
Last live show.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Mate, I can't wait. And just to get in the venue and just press
another one.
It's gonna be like it's gonna be a dream come true.
Could just do that for an hour and a half, couldn't we?
I by the way, people, if you're coming, get prepared. There will be a lot of buttons.
Button action. I do love some buttons.
That's a new button I've been working on.
Yeah, very impressive. We should say
quite sexual.
We should say that Anthony Watson will be our main guest, but there will be a couple of celebrity surprises dotted around the room throughout. So look out for some famous faces.
Yeah, and, it is. Put it this way: we have pulled out all the stops.
Yes.
I mean, there are some epic things going to happen.
Yeah.
I should just say thank you so much to everybody who is. Who is coming. We can't wait. I mean, this is going to be the best show we've ever done.
Yeah, it's
been
huge.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, me too.
I've been in chat training for it, and
really?
I'm just going to get out there, and you know what? I'm just going to play my own game. I'm not going to think too much about it. I'm just going to go out there and just deliver the banter.
So
I'm not going to think about the banter. The banter is going to come to me.
What's chat training? Is it like chatting, or are you taking silence?
No, it's mainly in the mirror.
Right, okay.
And I'm just chatting to myself, but I'm playing two parts.
Okay.
And I'm just making sure that conversation flows
yeah.
and the banter is strong. It takes quite a long time to get the tat-tat-tat going.
The back and forth.
But now I can do it. Archie, how are you? Yeah, man, very well. How are you? Mate, I'm very strong. Yeah, how was your Christmas? Really good Christmas. How about you?
Well.
Yeah, just with the family.
Well.
Oh, nice, nice. And everyone all good? Yeah, everyone's fine. How's your family? Yeah, pretty good, mate. Pretty strong. God, the weather. I can't believe how cold it is right now. I know. Yeah. I'm having to bloody wear gloves the whole time. Oh, God. Gloves. Are you playing football?
Okay, yeah, no, I think we get it. I think
and
we get
then
it
just goes on and on. Yeah. And I'll do that for an hour.
I think we get it.
That's the kind of pace I'm going at. And just think when I'm going to get in there, I'll be like 500
exhausting.
Chassis.
Poor Anthony Watson, he may cancel.
Oh, my God. I'm going to be like a bloody machine gun.
Talking about wearing gloves, I mean, most people are going to have quite a quiet January. Before we do the live show, you're off skiing.
Yes.
That is unbelievable.
I am off for a couple of days to Val d'Isère with Nielsen Holidays.
Nielsen Holidays. The greatest holidays for the greatest people.
So they took you to the beach and now they're taking you to the slopes. What a life.
Yeah, well, I need a bit of R&R before the pod.
Who are you going
with? I'll just go by myself, mate.
By yourself?
Just craving a bit of off-piste and apré action.
So you're going to go apré-ing every night by yourself?
Yeah, I'm just going to strap the goggles on, the helmet on, and just find some off-piste and just go down.
Find a guy with an acoustic guitar.
No snowplowing here, mate. If I see someone playing... the only people who snowplow are hockey players.
Right, okay.
Yeah, I just can't bear it.
So you're just parallel?
Oh, mate, I don't even turn.
Really?
Straight down.
All the way down.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can crack on straight to apres.
Anyone in my way, kids, women, pregnant women, they're out of the way.
Yeah.
I just find you can do some great business on the slopes. And the greatest thing is, as you know, I went to Cheltenham College, and most private schools in the UK are like this, but I in the winter term, we obviously had to ski to lessons, and that's how I've become so good.
Are you hoping to see Bill Sweeney out there?
I'm hoping so, because obviously I know we've said before he's a keen skier, and bonus he took last year, I think he would manage to get out two or three times just in January with his family. So hopefully catch up with him, yeah, have lunch and discuss how, you know, we're going to get ourselves another bonus.
Well, we should say...
I love his work on the bonuses. I've actually got him doing a little corporate gig for me just with a few clients of mine, just to talk them how you can sort of work your way getting a bonus when maybe you don't think you're going to get it or the company's not performing.
Well, Archie, today on the pod, we've got an England legend. I think England's most capped captain of all time. He led us to 3 Grand Slams, a World Cup final, and was obviously a British and Irish lion. The wonderful Will Carling. How did that come about?
Well, Gladys, when you hit the 100,000 follower mark, things do change.
Yes.
My life has become significantly better.
Yeah.
And I feel I am significantly better than a lot of people. But me and Will connected firstly on Instagram and then LinkedIn. And then naturally that becomes a WhatsApp relation. And we're in conversation about multiple things, you know, not just rugby, but business, a bit of lash here and there. And I said, mate, you've got great banter. Come on, the greatest podcast ever. And he said, love to. So he's a real hero of mine, someone that I've modeled myself on. It's quite a fitting way to have him as one of our last guests. And I'm very excited. I think the only thing to say, right, is onside. Onside. Chat. Well, I've got to say, for people who are not aware of Will, I'm sure most people are, but you are the original man that had the 3 C's. You know, you had the chat, you had the chassis, and you made the coin. So, you know, you're someone I very much look up to. I actually base a lot of my CEOing of Clapham on your career as England captain.
I don't know how to take that. I just, you know.
Take it as a compliment. Clapham has never been better. I mean, the rest of the country is falling apart, but Clapham is, you know, it's beating all records. Its economy is flourishing.
Will, you were never shy of speaking your mind and voicing your opinion. I mean, talking about watching rugby now and business, this England team have lost 5 of the last 6 games, only just beating a Japanese side is the only win. I mean, what have you made of them, in all honesty? Come on, give it to us straight.
I'm sad for them, really. I think it's a special time. If you ever get to play, you wear that shirt. And I think there's a lot of talent in the team. And I just don't think we're seeing the best of that talent. There's stuff going on in the background with the coaches. It's obviously causing issues. And I think that's really sad. That we could be watching some great players. And at the moment, we're just not seeing them fulfil that.
Will, obviously they're playing in Dublin a couple of weeks' time, the Aviva, but you used to play at Lansdowne Road. Give us a couple of your great memories there, because the atmosphere was pretty intense back in the good old days. And I'm guessing a couple of you got some abuse.
Yeah, you got abuse, but you got abuse everywhere. I think the crazy bit was when I first played Lansdowne Road, you only ever saw it on TV, so the camera angle was obviously coming out of this one stand. And I remember walking out on the pitch to have a look at it before we played, and you turn around and there were basically 2 almost like what you thought were houses in the corners of the stand, but they were bars. Obviously it was Dublin. It is Dublin, and you're like, you'd never seen those. And but Lansdowne Road has an amazing atmosphere, but there is a genuinely true story, because at international club level you can usually hear the odd word. You know, you go to Gloucester, you get abused and you can hear it, right? It's quite funny. Usually at international level, there's just too much noise to pick out any kind of words. But I do remember, true story, we were playing them. I can't remember, this was 94 or whenever it was, 95. And Jason Leonard got injured. And I went over, he'd sort of been rucked or whatever. and Kevin Murphy, our physio, ran on. So I'm standing with Kev and Rob Andrew, and we're trying to work out what's going on, but we're standing there and he lifts up his shirt and he's spraying his back, and this was brilliant. And suddenly heard, Leonard, you fat bastard, you don't need a physio, you need a bloody midwife. And it was just one of those bits where, and I'm actually looking at Jason at the time, right, and the line comes and you're trying not to laugh because it was a good one, right? And he's just looking at you, and it's just like, it doesn't often happen at test level where you can hear it, but
yeah, that's brilliant.
Dublin was, it was a great night. It was always a great night.
Will, you became England's youngest ever captain at 22, led us to 3 Grand Slams, a World Cup final. But a couple of years earlier, is it true that you were thinking about giving up rugby when you were at Durham? Apart from an old boys game, the great old public school circuit got you back interested in rugby. Is that true? Or?
I think I came back and played an invitation game up in the Northeast, and I hadn't played. I think I missed a season or whatever. But you do. Not be funny. You go from school to men's rugby. It's a bit different, or it certainly was back then. School's rugby is very polite, and then you go and get the shit kicked out of you in the Northeast at concert or whatever it is, and you're like, yeah, this is fun, you know. And you're students, so you never had any ball, you never won anything because your forwards are always getting beaten up, and it's pissing with rain, and you're just sort of like, yeah. There were a couple of games that you played where it just you managed to get a bit of ball, and then that was fun again. But I think I had a first year at Durham University. I think I had a fairly serious thought about: do you really want to carry this on, where you just get kicked, you get shooed, you get no ball, and it's just like you just get abused.
But what changed?
It's character building, though.
What changed? How come?
Managed to sort of get sort of played, I think, a bit of county, then got picked for the sort of the north of England. So you suddenly started playing with, you were playing with students in your pack who were just getting beaten up. So yeah. And then you started playing with men in the pack, and then you think actually got a bit of ball. So then that was it. And then you realised that it was a different game. Like there's a guy who used to play with me, a guy called Peter Winterbottom, who played for the Lions, England. One of the hardest guys I ever played with. And you realised it was different when I was playing for the North of England. The first time I played, this guy was my hero. I'd seen him at when I was at school. He'd also had a British line. He'd come up and played at the school. And so I remember we were playing the Southwest or whatever, got caught in this ruck, and they were kicking the out of me. And I looked up, and there was my hero and teammate a couple of yards away. I thought he's going to come in and sort them out. And he didn't. He just stood there and sort of watched from a distance. And I'm like, it seemed to last for ages, but about 20 seconds, obviously the whistle went. And I sort of got up and I went past him, and he just went, "Well played, mate." Because he obviously didn't know my name. And I said, "Sorry." He said, "Well done, mate." He said, "Don't ever make a noise. It just encourages them." And it was like, oh, okay. Different world. Yeah. He didn't squeal.
To be honest, that's weird. That's the same advice my geography teacher, Mr. Matthews, used to say to me: that don't make a noise, otherwise it will encourage me, not them, but him. But yeah,
was that when he was marking your prep? Was it?
Yeah, that was. We used to have special one-on-one lessons.
Over your shoulder.
Yeah, he was a lovely guy, actually, Mr. Matthews. But if you are listening, Mr. Matthews, please stop texting me now. I am in my mid-30s and I have a daughter, and I'm not interested in geography or meandering rivers anymore.
Talking of teammates, I mean, Archie's had a problem with some of his teammates at the Falcons, but didn't you once have a problem with Brian Moore?
To be fair to him, he qualified legal brain, very smart, very eloquent. So you'd stand up as captain and go, "Right, guys, hey, I had this idea. I think we should do X, Y, and Z." And all you got was, "Why? Why would we fucking do that?" And you'd look down and be like, good to see you. Morning, Brian. But you had to have a really good reason. But no, I think the best moment with him, we were talking, going back to Dublin, we were playing them in 95, and there was a guy, Keith Wood, who was a brilliant player. It was his first cap. And everyone was talking about this guy, Keith Wood, how good he was, how mobile he was, how strong he was, and all this lot. And I remember sitting with Dean Richards and Rob, and we were sort of talking about players meeting on the Friday night before the game. And we were in quite a good frame of mind. And I said, "Do you know what, Dino, we should wind Brian up, because actually he's got to have a really good game. We need him to have a really good game, get it all going." I said, "So what we'll do is in team meeting, I'll say a few things. Then I'll say, right, 8, 9, 10, Dean, what do we need to concentrate on?" Then I'll go to Dowie, who was sitting there as well, and Rob. I said, "But each of you finish at the end with, but this guy, Keith Wood, Christ, he's good. We're going to have to stop him, because this boy can change. He can win games. This guy is the strongest, fastest." I said, "Just really overdo the Keith Wood bit." And I'm like, "Yeah, perfect." So we go to team meeting, talk the serious bit. And then I sort of went, "Right, guys, key decision, 8, 9, 10. Dino, what do we need to concentrate on?" So he did all his bits. And he said, "But this guy." So he did this thing about Keith. And I had the core of my arm watching Brian, who's just muttering away to himself, you know. And go to Dowie. Dowie sort of does his bit about channels were kicking down, all that sort of stuff. And then he goes on about Keith Wood and gets to Rob and he does it. And he mentions Keith Wood. Moro just up, you know, fucking Keith Wood, he was effing and blinding, absolutely fucking veins out in his neck, bright red, absolutely brilliant, storms out of the team room. And we're like, I think we're ready. he had a good game, actually, to be fair to him.
That's brilliant.
With all those guys that you played with, and obviously that legendary team that sort of got to the final World Cup, obviously recently in the 2003s come out that they don't all stay, you know, they lost contact and now they're all coming back together and all various things. Are you still in contact with a lot of the group?
Being serious, look, I was a kid, right? And you're made captain at a ridiculous age and everyone writes this stuff. He was a great cabbie. He was this, he was that, you know. I was looked after by guys that I love and I still love them. And, you know, the Teagues, Winterbottoms, Dooleys, Richards, you know, they're just outstanding men. So, I still see. We had a reunion last year because, sadly, Paul Rendell, one of our lot, had got MND and sadly he's passed away since, but we had the reunion, so Christ, it was the, you know, and just brilliant seeing people. You know, the RFU Twickenham, they never encouraged, they've never organised stuff for teams like 2003. You know, we don't look after people who've played for England. They don't look anywhere near as well as they should.
Yeah. Are you going to try and make it like a yearly thing that you go and see, you know, get together?
No, what we're trying to do is I'm trying to create an alumni, say, for people who played for England.
Yeah.
Male, female, one cap, 100 caps. There should be a body that actually looks after players. So from the social part, reunion side, you know, actually organising that and getting it paid for, to healthcare, to transition from playing to work, all sorts, so that there's actually a body. There's so many smart, successful people who I am lucky enough to meet who are England rugby fans in the business world, and they would love to help. So if we can manage to weave some kind of club together where players benefit from that, then yeah, I think that would be outstanding. And then having reunions, it actually gives a bit of soul, a bit of body to actually, whether you played once or whether you played, you did something special, and therefore, you know, you're part of a special group, and we never recognise that.
Do you have to have played for England to join the club?
Yeah, unfortunately. Oh, I mean, Clapham was close, and there was a big debate about it.
Yeah,
you know, and obviously your name was mentioned.
It's gutting.
But, that was said, but it's just like unfortunately, didn't get passed.
Well, because I'm a member of the NED, and they've got a swimming pool on the roof. And that's a fantastic alumni, you know, but that's people who've done big, significant deals in London. And it doesn't matter if you've done one or 100 deals, you know, you can become a member of the NED, but I guess similar to the England alumni.
And it matters a lot that the swimming pool is on the roof to you, doesn't
it? Yeah, it really does. I mean, it's fantastic. To be able to go swimming on a roof is just really does impress the ladies in Infernos, because, you know, it's just a nice thing. There's a swimming pool on the roof and then they want to come for lunch and a dip.
You surely don't need to be able to talk about a swimming pool on a roof to impress the ladies.
Well, I mean, look, there's a lot of impressive things about me. You know, I'm normally wearing a Rolex. I have a selection of Ralph Lauren quarter zips. I have size 11 feet. So
I've never seen you wear a Rolex.
I do wear a Rolex. When you haven't seen me clubbing when I'm on one.
It's not on his wrist. It's not on his wrist.
It's not. No. But the thing is, you know, well, now I'm a single father to a daughter, Johnny Jono, who, you know, is hopefully going to be the rightful heir to the Clapham throne. It's wonderful. I think she will be the first female CEO of Clapham, which really is great. It's very hot these days. Very hot. So that's, you know, that's reflects very good on me. So
it's all going for you.
I can cook a really nice boiled chicken.
You can. That is true.
You've tasted it.
It is good. Completely flavourless. The way you want it.
It's flavourless but full of protein.
Will, you led England to back-to-back Grand Slams, obviously.
Back to the interview.
Obviously amazing achievements on the pitch, but what were the highlights of it? I mean, a couple of stories. You said it was always a good piss-up in Dublin. Can you remember a couple of good times just off the pitch celebrating your success with that amazing bunch of men you had?
It's so different in the sense that you it was almost compulsory. You'd play the game, and then you drank till you just couldn't basically function. And we thought that was recovery. That was recovery. That was hydration. That was relaxation. It was good for mental health. It was had so many benefits to it. I just sometimes wonder why they don't carry on doing it. But, you know, guy, not me, but the guys would start at sort of 6 o'clock and they would have 20 pints. You know, they would be, because they're still going at 4 and 5 in the morning. And it's just like, was unbelievable. I remember after, I think it was the first guy, so we ended up, we met Ian Botham, legendary cricketer,
yeah, yeah.
And sort of carried on drinking. And I remember, I felt quite sorry. This was in a hotel on Park Lane. There was this little, I think they were a German couple trying to have a romantic drink. And they obviously looked at Mickey Skinner in the wrong way. He walks over with an ice bucket and just tips it all over the bloke. This bloke was not happy, but he stood up and he was, you know, he was up to about Mickey's, and he just looked at him and I was just like, yeah, that's a shame. not the way to behave. But there's just, there are a lot of, I used to have a, there was a captain's room, but we used to stay on the park in the Hilton on the Park Lane, and they usually used to organize a captain's room so that when the nightclubs were all shut, you could carry on. And one time they couldn't find, or they hadn't told the team where the captain's room was. So basically they came into my room, and in the morning you go down, you sign your room bill, and it's usually, you know, a couple of pages print out. Well, I remember standing there as this thing just kept printing out. And it was like, you know, you had about 14 pages and I'm like, oh, wow. Yeah, okay. I didn't realize there were so many sandwiches or types of wine. Moro's view was just order the most expensive wine because then you can pretend that I know my wine. And it was just, he signed it off and I, you know, was just crazy. But you used to have some, they were great nights. Really, really good nights.
Do you think, like, looking at rugby, and I know obviously rugby has become professional, more and more professional, obviously as the years go on, but, you know, back in your day and going into that World Cup, you know, team that won in 2003, and in that era, that bridge, you know, your era to that era, and watching Living with the Lions and stuff like that, there you saw characters within the game and people endeared them, you know, yourself, Jeremy Guscott. I'm just talking about English players that, you know, obviously I grew up, you know, watching and learning about Lawrence Diallo, people like that. Do you think nowadays, now we look at the game, the players are so protected that those characters don't come out and really there's no one to really latch onto and follow? And I think back in your day, people enjoyed those characters a lot more.
And being serious, I think, like, however long ago it was, 2019, when Eddie asked me to go back, he said, will you come and do the leadership? And I said no. And he was like, why? I said, too old, mate. I'm, you know,
yeah,
irrelevant, all this. Anyway, eventually he persuaded me. And one of my worries was that you go back in and find that sort of no characters, not much fun, all that sort of. And what I loved when I went back in was there's some great characters, really good guys. And that sense, at the beginning of the show when we were talking about, there's some really good guys in there. You just, because it's professional now and the RFU have to put this sort of blanket over, no one gets to know them. And I think that's the sadness, is that, you know, I'd love people to know. I sort of read sometimes on social media that the sort of views on X, Y, and Z, and you're thinking, no, they are good guys. They know to have a good time, but it's like camera phones. You just can't do. Yeah. If there were those phones around, you wouldn't have a team. You know, everyone would be banned. I mean, it's just, it's sad. It's a very, very different world, but... Yeah. They are great. There are some very, very good characters in there.
But do you not think that is the problem, that rugby is so protective, that we're in this stage where they're almost wanting not to make a mistake, whereas people will endear to people who make mistakes and put themselves out there?
It's so crazy that if they're going to go out for a drink, they're not allowed to wear anything with an RFU logo on it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how ridiculous is that? You're like, you're having a beer. Wow, sportsman, rugby player drinks a beer. Shock horror. Yeah. But it's always like, oh, we don't want to, you know, you can't have our logo next to it. And you're like, that's ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, it's that sort of paranoia that you go, I really genuinely, that you might get a few do-gooders who, if the guys were seen drunk in a bottle, go, oh, I think that's disgraceful. They're meant to be professional rugby players and represent England. But the vast, vast, vast majority would be like, fine, having a good time. Great. Yeah.
Guinness sponsor the Six Nations, Asahi sponsor the World Cup, but you're not allowed to have a beer in an RFU jacket. Doesn't really make sense, does it?
Not really.
No.
So it's just like, and I think that's it. We moan, like you're just saying now, we moan that we don't have characters in sport, but actually that's because the sort of the PR that's wrapped around them means they're not allowed to be what they are. Well, and that's what the game needs.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't do it all well. You know, I can't just, kill social media.
And
I,
yeah.
It's a shame you weren't better at rugby.
The problem is, I mean, I could have gone pro.
Or banter.
I could have, but then, Will, you know this. There's so much money in the city.
You're a coulda, shoulda, woulda. I mean, you would have, wouldn't you?
I would have done it. Ask Nick Abendanon. When I was at school, he said to me, listen, you go for it, mate. Yeah. You go and play rugby and, I'll go and do the social media stuff. And I looked at him and said, Nick, you don't have the chat, mate.
No.
You go and do the rugby. I'm going to go and collect.
I'll do social media.
World. Yeah, yeah.
And well, it's very thoughtful of you.
Yeah, but I've been on six figures for God knows how many years now. I mean, if I was playing rugby, I'd be only 5 years or six figures. You know, your best years. Well, so,
obviously,
money makes you happy.
Benders.
That's what my dad told me.
Commercial break.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening over the last 5 years. It's been an incredible ride. We couldn't have done it without your support. It's an emotional time that is coming to an end, but all good things must. But if you're thinking, how am I going to fill my weeks, my commutes into the city? Well, fear not, because I've got a soon-to-be award-winning podcast called The Go-To Food Podcast, where each week I interview the most famous chefs in the world, and of course, restaurant owners and all these wonderful TV stars. As we discuss their lives, have a laugh, eat some wonderful food. It's kind of like the Rig Beers, just not quite as crazy. Anyway, the link is in the bio if you want to check that out. Also, it must be said that the Samurai Boys have still got quite a lot of stash to sell. So if you want to get your hands on some limited edition Club Falcon stash, then please help yourself and click the link in the bio. Anyway, back to Will Cowley. Benders was your partner, your 1-2. What about you and Gus Scott? I mean, the most famous pairing, the most successful centre pairing, but apparently great on the pitch chemistry, but off the pitch he wasn't very much of a man who enjoyed a drink and a bit of banter like Archie.
No. He enjoyed a drink.
Oh.
He used to go drinking with the forwards. He
really?
Thought he was a real drinker.
Wow.
Yeah. It never ended well. He also, I think he gets far too much credit, actually, because, it's, you've got to work out who made the space for him. And it was always me.
Yeah.
He was a special, I mean, he was a very special player. So, in fact, I'm seeing him doing a function with him in a few weeks. But he liked to drink. Couldn't drink much, but at least he was
up for it.
Yeah, he was always up for it.
Will, you're obviously England legend, but also a Lion who went on tour New Zealand. How pissed off are you that, firstly, you weren't made captain, Gavin Hastings got the gig, and secondly, I've heard through the grapevine that his team talks were the least successful things ever witnessed in terms of sort of results. Can you share any light on that?
Well, the only light I could share on that is you didn't hear mine, did you? I mean, they were really bad. So in terms of not being made captain, to be fair, right, and which most people wouldn't understand, 93, which was the year of the tour, I had a shit year because sort of most of the guys who were my heroes, I knew they were retiring at the end of the season, and that really did my head in because they'd looked after me, and I couldn't sort of think, well, so what's it going to be like when they're gone? And so... 90, we lost two games that year in the champ, which is the worst we'd ever been. And I must say, I wasn't playing very well, wasn't doing too much. So I didn't have an issue, to be fair, at not being captain at all. Never had. My issue was that I was so shit on the tour until. So it was this great moment. I had never been dropped in rugby from any team everywhere. And so got dropped after the first test. Shouldn't probably have even played the first test. So Teague goes, we'll go for a drink. So we're sitting in this bar and we're having a drink and you've just been told, you know, you're dropped. And Peter Winterbottom comes in and he sits next to me. He hadn't spoken to me for about 10 days. So I'm sitting there and Teague goes, so mate, you know, cheer up sort of thing. And I looked at Wince, I went, so what's wrong with you? And he goes, as in what? I said, well, you haven't spoken to me for 10 days. I said, what's happened? He goes, you've been shit. Right. And I'm like, yeah. And Teague goes, you're a sensitive bastard, aren't you? And but Wince just looks, and I went, so why is that so big deal for you? He goes, I told everyone down here, because he had played down there about 7 or 8 years before. He goes, I told everyone down here that you were good. He said, and you've been shit. And I'm like, yeah. He goes, sort it out. He got up and left. So I'm like, yeah, okay.
You did get back in for the third test and had a lot better game. But Ian McGeachan was a bit harsh, wasn't he? I mean, he said the difference between you and Gus Scott, he was a great player, you were good because you didn't rise as a lion. I mean, you were England's most successful captain in over 35 years, arguably in history, if Johnson didn't win that World Cup, if Johnny didn't do that drop goal. First person to beat Australians in South Africa in like 20 years. I mean, McGeachan, if you're listening, show this guy some respect. That must have pissed you off, though.
No, not really. But Geach is all right. Geach's big thing is the Lions.
Yeah.
So in his view, he probably just thought I hadn't put the effort in to the Lions and I didn't care. And to be fair to him, right, so 97 comes along and there was a lot of discussion about whether I'd captain that. I'd sort of stepped down as England captain. And I had I met Geach at a do, and I'd sort of read the book about how even in 89, he sort of said I hadn't want to go on tour. I'd fractured my leg. You know? And it's just sort of like, I sort of said to him, I said, Geach, I said, I couldn't come on tour. I'd fractured my leg. And he was just like, yeah. And I said, look, Geach, it's one of my big I apologize. You probably think I didn't give a shit about the Lions. I said, I did. It just, all the timings really just messed me up. And I sort of said to him as well, I said, Geach, I suppose the only thing in my defense was at 22, you're told you're captain of England. That's your focus. And I said, I was obsessed with it. And did everything. I said, but it drains you, right? And I suppose, yeah, in a way, the Lions didn't feature on my radar the same as I was captain of England, because that was the honour I'd been given. But I had a good chat with him, and you sort of think, yeah, and look, get on well with him. He's sort of, I understood where he was coming from, but he's very protective of the Lions,
yeah.
And I understand why.
You got sacked as captain in 95 before the World Cup, before being reinstated. Can you remind our younger listeners why you were sacked? And also, apparently there was a bit of follow-up, even physically.
Physically?
Well, did you not have three of them up against the wall or something?
Yeah, well, that was over a period of time. Well, yeah, so the for your younger listeners, if they haven't fallen asleep, is like... So I was asked to do an interview about the RFU, was asked all these questions, and I played a very straight bat. It was by a guy, the interview was Greg Dyke, who went on to sort of head the BBC.
Oh, yeah.
Sneaky little bastard.
Because
at the end of this interview, I sort of took my microphone off, turned it off, put it on the table. He had the camera over his shoulder, sort of, you know. I walked around past the camera, and he had taken his microphone off, put it on the table, but he obviously hadn't turned it off. And I didn't know that. So as I was leaving, he goes, come on, Will. He said, the game's going to go professional. What do you think? I said, I don't know, Greg. I said, but hey, you don't need 57 old farts to run the game, do you? Talking about the RFU. Laughed, walked out. And he got it on his microphone. So obviously they put it on the documentary, went out. And I was told I had to call the president, who was at the East India Club, which I should have realised it wasn't going to go well. Sort of rang him to apologise, and he sort of stopped me. He said, you don't have to apologise, Will. He said, because you're no longer captain. This was 10 days before a World Cup. And I'm like, oh, okay. I said, Dennis, can I ask? I said, am I allowed to play in the World Cup? He said, yeah. I said, fine. I just put the phone down. And because actually, being honest, I wasn't that pissed. You just want to lift a World Cup. I don't care whether you lift it first or last.
Yeah.
So So you're just like, oh, whatever. They've been after me for years because I had put a few of them up against the wall because they're just pompous and anyway, not clever.
Yeah.
But so got sacked, and then that was the weekend of the sort of cup final. And obviously the players just decided that they none of them would accept the captaincy. So they were ringing all these players saying, will you be captain? And they were all like, no. eventually I get this call on sort of 2 days later saying, listen, if you can apologise, the president will reinstate you. I said, I've already apologised to him. He said, well, apologise again. And I'm like, okay. And had the most awkward press conference in history sitting next to him as I'm reinstated as England captain. And you're like, yeah, this is good.
Do you think English rugby has moved on really from that period in terms of having like old farts running the game and like lacking any initiative to sort of or innovation, or do you think it has come on since then?
I think they employ a lot of people at the RFU now, and some of them are very good, but I think the game still has not come to terms with where the world is, certainly at the moment. You know, you're thinking all the bits that you guys have heard about, you know, gamify stuff, the whole experience. There's, you know, where is data in? Where have they used data? You think if you see some of those athletes that play for England now, you know, we'd like to know how fast are they? Where's the acceleration? Who's got the fastest pass? Who kicks the foot? All that sort of stuff should be on the coverage. I mean, people would be fascinated by it. Who hits the hardest? And it's all that stuff's available, but they don't use any of it. And I just think there's so much that could be done in terms of understanding how do we inspire youngsters, young boys and girls to play the game. You know, that's they need stars to follow. And the one thing I think rugby has to get over is that we tend to think it's a team game, team first, therefore we must not have any stars. Well, Johnny Wilkinson wasn't detrimental to the 2003 lot, nor was Jono or Lawrence. You know, these guys were stars. So I think there's got to be a trust that you can have stars and they still understand that the team comes first, but we've got to build stars. And that's what we just don't do. There's almost like a jealousy of players.
Carlo, if you ever get back into rugby, just give me a call because I have got a lot of ideas. I mean, firstly, where is a computer game people can play? Children, that's how a lot of people get into these sports, follow teams, choose players. That doesn't happen. The social media content around it is so safe and boring. Like, that, you know, if you are a person that doesn't watch rugby, why would you watch something about who's your favourite tackle, what's your favourite game? There is no edge to the content. And like you said, there's no celebration of data or, you know, in boxing, UFC, these are fast growing sports that, you know, boxing's always been big, but it continues to grow. It celebrates like the sort of
physicality.
Yeah, the physicality, the violence. And yet we don't want to do that. Everything is played with a straight bat. That is a great terminology. And it just seems that like other sports are just going miles ahead. I think like you found out that Gen Z is not even a top 20 sport.
Yeah, yeah.
I know. I've seen all those figures. And you think, and I completely agree, the attraction of rugby is gladiatorial, right? You've got brave people walking out onto a pitch. People admire that. They're fascinated by it. We have got to utilise that. They have all the concussion issues. I understand that. But there's technology now in terms of the gum shields. You make it a medical issue. You can look after rugby players much better than they've ever been looked after before. So the concussion, if they explain that to people and they understood how using these gum shields and having doctors in charge of this can percolate all the way down into schools, clubs, everyone who plays rugby is protected, right? So that concussion should not be an issue going forward because we have technology now. Get that word out there and then celebrate and glamour these gladiators, these brave men and women who play rugby. Yeah. That's what inspires people. And we need to be doing that.
And this podcast, but unfortunately this is coming to an end now because...
Well, we could reinstate if they change their concussion rules. But talking about gladiators, Jonah Lomu, I mean, was he the greatest you ever came up against? 4 tries in that 95 semi-final where you led us almost to the final again.
I don't know if he's the greatest. He was the biggest thing I ever came up against, fastest thing. And, it just physically was unbelievable. And we'd watch tapes of him, but you know, I know it's been said, but you're thinking, I remember when I turned around in the tunnel, just I don't know why it was delayed, and he was about four back, and you were just suddenly like, oh shit. he was unreal. And I think as a captain, I sort of prepared myself. I used to do a load of preparation before all games, all the different scenarios you think you'd face. I'd never faced a scenario that 18 minutes into a game, it was over. You're under the post. They've scored four tries or whatever it is. It was just like, Christ. And I'd never covered off that one. So he was unbelievable.
It's a shame because you scored two tries that semi, which get forgotten and set up to. So in many ways, would have been man of the match in another universe.
Yeah, but hey, it was just, I was in my world.
But the way you described Jonah Lomo and you know, he was the big lister, it's almost the way I described the best night of my life with a girl. She wasn't probably the best looking, but she certainly was the biggest. And, you know, and it was one of those things, I'd done a lot of scenario playing in my head, but nothing really, you know, prepared me for that night. And yeah. I still look back at that. It's like, you know,
do you ever wonder how she looks back at that night?
I think she
deeply disappointing experience.
Yeah, I think she took the victory quite quickly. It was quite a quick experience for her, and she left.
Was that
the weightlifter in Marseille on the cruise ship? Yeah, I felt used and abused, but she never came back to me. Great girl. 6'2".
Wow,
19 stone of pure muscle.
Wow, like Simon Shaw.
Yeah, I think it could have been Simon Shaw in a wig.
That must have been a tough night for her. Talking of tough, I mean, how tough was it when you eventually retired? Because we've done a lot of work with Restart Rugby, talking about looking after ex-players, ex-England players. But I read that you suffered quite badly the first couple of years. And any advice? We have a lot of professional players who listen to this podcast for those who may be retiring soon.
Yeah, I think since I was the age of 7 or whatever, rugby was sort of number one in my life. It was... You were playing or you were sort of relaxing at the end of the season or you were preparing for the next. Everything was about number one in your, when you woke up was rugby. And then suddenly it's gone. And it obviously, you know, you managed to do okay in it. So you had a certain profile, which was always a double-edged sword. And then suddenly it's gone. And it's a bit of a car crash for a couple of years. I think that's hence why that I'm trying to set up this alumni for the England thing. And it's because trying to prepare for it and get some mentoring from people that have been there before. I think it's very hard. You sort of think when you play sport at that level, you've got psychologists, you've got strength and conditioning coaches, you've got recovery, you've got really good people around you. Looking after you in life, and then suddenly they're all gone, and there's no direction. And what do you get up for in the morning, and why? And you know, all that sort of stuff is gone, and it's trying to transition to the next thing. And I think rugby does a very poor part in preparing players for life after. But I think lots of sports do a very bad. Job of that. So it's hard to explain it. People have got to ask for help, but then there's got to be a lot of people out there willing to give the help. And I think those two things could be improved massively.
Obviously, an absolute legend in the game. I don't know if we will see it at Twickenham or Allianz, as it's now called, but we hope to.
I think Will's coming to the last Rugbiz Live at the Clapham Grand. 600 raging fans. Anthony Watson. There's a few surprises there.
Well, including
Anthony
Will.
Anthony Watson. Now, there is a lovely man.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to it.
No, what a player.
570 tickets sold.
Wow.
They've just opened 50 more tickets. So I've got the app just checking on the day-by-day basis how much money we're going to make. Planning my next escapade to Dubai.
Almost as sad as the ex-Harlequins place.
But Will, thank you so much for coming on. It's very fitting that the podcast's coming to end, but we get a real rugby legend and royalty on the podcast.
No, hey, it's been a pleasure. It really has.
Does he have chat? Or does he have no chat? Does he have chat? Or does he have no chat? Gonna ask those questions now. Jeremy Guscott.
No chat.
Brian Moore.
No chat.
Martin Johnson.
No chat.
Ian McGeeken.
No chat.
Mike Catt.
No chat.
Rob Andrew.
No chat.
Lawrence Delalio.
Yeah, chat.
Austin Healy.
No chat.
Simon Shaw.
No chat.
And finally, Will Greenwood.
Yeah, chat.
Yeah, has he tried to recruit you to come and play? Right, he's still playing.
Yeah, I went to Maidenhead and trained with Will. He's a good guy, intense.
I mean, just to clarify on the Austin Healy bit, I mean, there's a lot of chat, but not that anyone ever wants to listen to. But you know what I mean? So he calls out his own name. He's just that kind of guy. Yeah. He's just. But Will Greenwood, he's still so fit. It's just
really yeah, it's crazy. We went to Maidenhead and I did a pre-season training with him, and I couldn't believe it. I mean, there is a guy that loves rugby.
Yeah.
But yeah. He's quite an intense.
Knows rugby. Yeah. Knows his rugby.
I've had an experience with Will Greenwood and I've had experience with Lawrence Diallo, and both of them are quite intense for different reasons. But,
I was reading a bit where you said that Lawrence put you to bed.
Lawrence went to Live Golf and had a night, and he was very accommodating, and he let me come back to his hotel.
That's a phrase for it.
Yeah, but it's quite surreal because obviously you do this, and I grew up with like yourself playing and Will Greenwood and Lawrence Diallo, and then you're in a hotel room
after.
No, but you're in a hotel room with Lawrence Diallo, and he's like you're having a conversation with him, but you are
in bed. But
this point, Will, I'd drunk quite a lot and I was starting to slur, and then I fell into a jacuzzi. He saved me from it. He dried me and put me to bed like a father would put down a kid. And then in the morning gave me a bacon egg sandwich, and I had severe anxiety. Touch. Yeah. He gets a bad rap, but he's a very, very nice, caring bloke. I think deep down, obviously, you know, he's got lots going on, but he was very, very nice and a legend.
Is this for the pod? Or?
Well, no, yeah, you can keep it in the pod. But Will Greenwood, intense in a different way. He kept asking us how we felt out of 10. I was like, yeah, I feel fine.
About what though?
I don't know. We sat down, didn't you? He said, how do you feel? And I said, I feel good. He said, out of 10, I said, a 7, 8. He goes, okay, I'm about a 2. But he said, I'll get to about a 7 when we start. But I like him a lot. Very nice.
Yeah, he is. Went to the same school and then university. He followed me.
Sebra, yeah. Yeah.
He still does the Sebra run, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that I'm not surprised. He's he's so thin, it's frightening.
I know.
Yeah, he's too thin.
Yeah, I hope you're right.
You need, like me, you need a bit of meat. Like, if you play fly half inside centre, you know, you want to be taking that crash ball.
Yeah.
You want the pectoroids showing through as you go into the club, so yeah.
Yeah, you do need a bit of meat.
Will Carling, you've been an absolute legend. Thank you so much for giving us your time, mate.
Mr. Carling, thank you so much. Love and champagne. Awesome. Love and champagne.
Well, that was the wonderful Will Carling. Is he going to be coming?
I think he will come. I know his son is a big fan.
Well, we should remind people that there's about 40, 50 tickets left.
I think so. They have just released another 50 tickets.
Have they opened up the top?
They're opening up the top. The tables, all the VIP, all the boxes are gone. They're going to open up the top. I mean, I'll just repeat it for anyone that hasn't seen or heard.
Yeah.
On the 1st of February, after a very dry January, yes. Clapham Grand will open its doors at 2 o'clock. You will come in to what will be a Twickenham Stadium HQ environment.
Yes.
The atmosphere will be electric.
Yeah.
At 2:45, the podcast will begin. There are multiple surprises along the way. We'll be doing our greatest hits. And we have Anthony Watson, England and British Lions legend, as a guest. After the pod, a big screen.
Even bigger than the one we have for the pod.
Yeah, we'll be coming down.
Yeah.
And we will all, as a group, watch Ireland versus England. And we will be chanting.
National anthem, chugging beers.
It will be probably the loosest atmosphere Clapham have ever seen.
Yeah.
After the game.
Yes.
All 500, 600 people, we will be doing a conga line out the Clapham Ground all the way down the Northcote Road. And as 500 people descending on Northcote Road to cause absolute mayhem.
Wow.
That is it. Clapham will never see a night like
this.
This is the last podcast we will do.
Yeah.
And if you miss it, you will regret it.
Well, February the 1st.
Gone for it.
Click the link in the bio. The 12 quid a ticket, but it was fucking nothing. I mean, why are we doing it so cheaply?
And before I forget, we will be announcing that guy Saracens. I keep forgetting his name, but I will have it for the live show.
We're going to have him up.
Yeah, and for the first time ever, we will reveal his name. And we can, as a group, drop him a note on LinkedIn and just say, great work. You're a top guy. Keep doing what you're doing.
Time.
the only way for him is up. He'll probably get Bill Sweeney's job at some point.
Well, Archie,
and that might not be good for us, Cledders.
No.
But to be fair, I get it.
He deserves it. He's a really good guy.
Archie,
I know you've got a ski boot fitting, so I should probably let you go soon. But we should say, guys, please come to our last live show. Click the link in the bio. We hope you enjoyed that epic interview with the wonderful Will Carling. We've got Spencer Matthews on the podcast next week.
Jeez.
Spenny Matthews. What's he up to nowadays?
Oh, we'll find out.
Not made in Chelsea.
No.
That's for sure.
Don't mention Chelsea to him.
Yeah. He gets very angry.
I don't think he'll enjoy it. But anyway, Cole, we'll see you next week. And I am so excited, mate, for the podcast. It's going to be incredible. So
click the link in the bio, get your tickets if you haven't.
Enjoy your life in Clapham this week. I'm off to Badazer.
Mate, have a good one.
Champagne.
Check it, yo. Make yourself at home. We got diesel or some of that homegrown. Sit back in your throne. Turn off your phone, because this is our zone. Videos, televisions, 64s, PlayStations, way up Henry with precision, a few herbs and a bit of Benson, but don't forget the Rizzler, lean like the Tower of Pisa, these are our ways, yeah, and this is a day in the life of a geezer, for this ain't a club track, pull out your sack and sit back, whether you white or black, smoke weed, chase brown or two rock, we on a mission, support the cause, sign a petition, summon all your wisdom, the music's a gift from the man on high, the Lord and his children. Triple T, Mirror Rude Boys, come rain or snow, the Buddha flows. You don't know, stand on the corner, watch the show, cause life moves slow. Sort your shit out, then roll. Sex, drugs, and on the dole. Some men rise, some men fall. I hear your call, stand tall now. As they come to the years, original pirate material.